session number 20009, reel 1.
Les Perry, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Barking, Essex, on the 28th of July, 1925.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at Barking?
Yes. First of all, I went to Ripple Infant School, and then there was a new school being built, which was called Eastbury School, and I was 7 years old when I was transferred to that. I was only there a short time. Then I went back to Ripple Junior School at 7 years old. At 11, I was transferred back to Eastbury Senior School, where I carried on until I was 14, and then I left school and started work.
So you left school about the time war broke out?
Yes, I left school at the summer holidays, which was July, August, and the war broke out in September.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I did. And I was at my aunt's house at the time. And my cousin was in the Territorials. And, of course, that was a bit traumatic for my aunt. She started leading off. I ran straight down the garden, jumped the garden fence and ran home, which was about a quarter of a mile away, to get my gas mask. Because, you know, we'd been told about the air raids, you'll get terrific air raids, they'll use gas and all the rest of it. And my one thought was to get my gas mask.
Did you get a job on leaving school?
Yes, I worked for the Plessy Company at Ilford. And it was strange, really, because the first week I came home, my mother said to me, where's your pay packet? As they did in those days. So I handed over my pay packet. She opened it up. There was 12 and 6 in there. She opened it up. She took 10 shillings and she gave me two and sixpence. Well, the following week, the former said, you're doing well, Leslie, so I'm going to put you on bonus. So that week, I earned 14 shillings. So I came home and my mother said, have you got your wage packet? So I said, yes. And they held it up. She said, it's open. I said, yeah. And I took 10 shillings out. I said, that's for my board. I said, I'm keeping the rest for myself. And from now on, I'll buy my own clothes. And I did. When you compare that with the kids today, I mean, 4/5 of my wages went to help to support my two sisters. Because my father had a very poor job. He was a railway porter. And their wages were very, very low. But, of course, he had a regular job, which was a big thing in those days.
Did the war affect you at first?
Well, no, we were on war work, and it was drummed into us that we were on war work. We used to sometimes go to work in an air raid, and we'd come home in an air raid. And I used to cycle to work. And myself and another chap, and every now and again we'd hear a piece of shrapnel hit the road and we'd stop and see who could find the biggest piece of shrapnel going to work, and we kept those as souvenirs. Sometimes they were too hot for us to handle.
What was the war work that Plessy's were doing?
It was electrical work. Mainly electronics, as they are. Well, I think they're still doing it, aren't they? They're still doing the electrical works today. Ministry of Defence projects and what have you. But in those days, it was communications and telephones and all that sort of thing. It was interesting work, but to me, it was rather boring, because they were putting, as the chaps were getting called up, they were moving us onto bigger jobs. And they put me on a machine, which was an automatic drilling machine. And you had to, it was about drilling about an inch and a half hole through a steel tube, and you set the machine going, and then you just stood and watched it. And that was very, very boring. I felt that I needed to get out. I needed to get a trade. And I was talking to my cousin once when he came home on leave, and he said, well, why don't you try to get in the building trade? Well, from there, I went back to the places, and I saw the personnel manager, and I asked for my cards. He said, you can't have your cards, you're on war work. I said, I can, I said, because you can't hold me until I'm 16. He said, who told you that? I said, my father. So he said, well, that is correct. He said, but I still want to keep you. I said, no, I'm sorry, I want to learn a trade. So anyway, I got my cards. I went up to Barking on a Monday morning, and that weekend, Barking Town Centre had been bombed, and it was, the whole of it was razed to the ground. And I saw the manager of a building firm talking to the foreman carpenter. So I went up to him. I said, is there any chance of a job? So he said, well, what would you like to do, son? Bearing in mind, I was about 15 and a half. I was about 5 foot 6 tall, I suppose. So he said, what would you like to do? So I said, well, I've heard that they're earning good money on demolition. So he said, well, look, son, he said, I think we'd better teach you to build houses before we teach you to knock them down. He said, because you could easily knock a wall down on top of your mates, he says, and you could kill somebody. So he said, when can you start? I said, well, start this afternoon, tomorrow. He said, right, be at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning and you'll have a start. So I reported to him at 8 o'clock next morning, and he said, right, go down the yard, see the plumber foreman, and tell him to give you a start. So I went down the yard, saw the plumber foreman. He said, right, see that old chap over there? Go and tell him that you've got to work with him. So I went across and I said, saw this old chap. I said, oh, the foreman said, I've got to come and work with you. Okay, son, he said, we're just going down the road to fix a toilet pan, to renew a toilet pan. Pick that pan up and away we go. So I said, hold on a minute. I said, what do you mean pick that pan up? He said, put your hand down the pan. He says, I said, do you expect me to carry that pan through the streets? So he says, yes. So I said, I'm not doing that. I said, what if my mates see me? So he says, no, he said, it's all right. He said, it's clean, it's new. I said, no, I'm not doing it. He said, well, you better go and see the manager then. So I went back to the manager. He said, you're a proud little fellow, aren't you? He said, look, I'll give you one more chance. Go down the yard and see the foreman carpenter and tell him I've sent you. So I went down and I started with carpenters, which I liked a lot better because I was pretty good at carpentry at school. And from there, I sort of got into the building trade. There wasn't a lot of building going on because it was nearly all bomb damage repairs. But we were called into the office one day. Everyone was called into the office because the night before, Norwich had been bombed and they needed men for bomb damage repairs. So, of course, we all volunteered. It was an adventure. And we all volunteered, and we were working 7 days a week. I, for my part, was knocking down the ceilings where the ceilings had been damaged. We were getting up in the roof and kicking the ceilings down, and then downstairs we were getting a shovel and breaking the ceilings down. And it was all the ceilings in the East Anglia, around the Norwich area, were constructed with reeds and plaster. And of course, that was filthy dirty. And all the old ladies, they saw one lady doing it, so everybody did it after that. And they got the old tin bath out, and we used to take our swimming trunks, and then as soon as we finished work, we'd go in the toilet, put our swimming trunks on, and then we'd get in the bath, and the old ladies would wash our backs. It was quite a laugh. But I stuck that for about 3 months. And then
Could you tell me whereabouts in Norwich you were working? Do you remember?
I don't exactly know. I know it was on the... First of all, it was at Mousehold, a place called Mousehold. But we were in digs there, and the digs were very bad. In fact, some of the chaps were had to get up at night because there were bugs in the bed, and they slept on the lawn. And then we moved up to another. We moved out the other side of Norwich. I don't know exactly where it was, but it was a new estate, and it was to the Yarmouth side of Norwich. But I don't know. I can't remember the area.
Would this be 41 or 42? Do you think?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure when it was. Not sure what it might have been. That no, would have been about 41. I would have thought.
There was a heavy bombing raid on Norwich in 42.
Oh well, it must have. But it was then when the cathedral was bombed. It must have been then. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I stuck that for about 3 months, working 7 days a week in this filthy conditions, and then I came home, and the manager didn't like that. I had a row with the manager, and I went to work one day, and I was 2 minutes late. But the gang were working over at Edmonton, at a British Oxygen Company at Edmonton, and I'd missed the lorry, so the manager said, well, get on your bike and go over to Edmonton, and then you can come home on the lorry when you come home. I said, but I don't know where Edmonton is. So, because in those days, you know, we weren't very streetwise. Outside of Barking, I mean, I could go to Ilford on a bus, I could go to East Ham on a bus, but outside of Barking, we were lost. So I said, well, I can't go there. So he said, why? So I said, well, I said, I don't know where it is. So he said, look, son, he said, what are you going to do then? So I said, well, I'll go home and I'll lose the day. I said, and I'll come back tomorrow and I'll make sure I'm not late tomorrow. He said, no. He said, you go over there now on your bike. I said, no, I'm not going to do it. He said, look, son, he said, you want to join the army, it'd make a man of you. So I did no more, came out. I went down to Romford to recruiting office and I joined the army. I was 17 and 8 months.
Do you know what the date was about?
It would be about the end of March.
43.
I had a medical and passed A1. We took the oath of allegiance. We got the king's shilling. I think it was in those days was a half a crown. I think it was one day's money or something. I came home. So my mother said, you're home early, Liz. So I said, yeah. What's wrong then? So I said, I've had a row with Mr. Butland. So he said, well, what happened then? So I said, well, he said, I ought to join the army and make a man of me. So she said, bloody cheek. She said, what did you say? I said, well, I've been down to recruiting us and join the army. She went mad. She got a coat on, she went to the office, she sorted out the manager, which made it very difficult for me when I came out of the army to go get my job back. Anyway, I had to wait for the next intake, which would be about 6 weeks after I'd signed. I got a temporary job. And then on the 5th of May, 43, I was told to report to Worley Barracks at Brentwood, number one infantry training centre. And that's when my army career started. But prior to that, I don't know if it's irrelevant, but I was thinking only last night, the way that things have changed in 50 years since I was a boy, well, a bit more than that actually, because I'm 74 now, but my early recollections is seeing a horse-drawn fire engine pulling out of Barking fire station with all sparks flying out the back of the boiler, because all the pumps were driven by steam in those days, and I could have only been about, I don't know, five or six. And other things was walking about Barking town centre on a Saturday night waiting for the price of meat to come down, because in those days they had no cold rooms, and all the meat the shop fronts came out and all the meat was on the slabs, and they about 9:30, you'd hear the butchers all shouting out, "They're coming down, girls, they're coming down," and then all the women would congregate round the shops, and then he'd pick up a piece of meat and say, "Who'll give me a shilling for this? Who'll give me one or three for this?" and all that sort of thing, and they was all waiting for the prices to come down, because they just didn't have the money. I mean, I can remember my mother standing outside a haberdashery shop looking at children's socks with tears in her eyes because she couldn't afford to buy my two sisters a pair of socks each. And that's how it was. It was hard. I mean, all the washing had to be done in the sink on a rubbing board. And my mother used to take in three lots of washing and to make ends meet. And you'd come home on a Monday night, a Monday lunchtime, and there was all lines strung across the living room, because we only sort of had one living room in those days, a living room with scullery and a bathroom. And they'd all wet washing, and you'd have to duck underneath this wet washing, this is in the winter time, obviously, to have your lunch. And this went on for 3 days, because my mother was doing other people's washing as well, to make ends meet. And there was no washing machines, there was no fridges, there was no cars in the roads, very few, well, one or two cars, but very few. It's so strange when I look back that the way things have changed, and the kids today got it easy to what our parents had, and their parents had it even harder. I mean, my wife, she comes from Derbyshire, and her mother, their toilets were about 25 yards across the yard. And at the end of the toilet block, they used to have a washroom. I forget what they called it now. But in that washroom, they used to have a copper. And they'd light the fire and boil the water. And then they'd have what they call a paunch tub, which was a tin tub with a big, what they called a dolly, a wooden dolly, which they pushed up and down to agitate the clothes. And they had no wash powders, those sort of things. It was all bars of sunlight soap or something of that nature, carbolic soap. And all the clothes had to be boiled. And then they used to put what they call bluebell dye, I think it was, or bluebell bluing or something. And it was a little tablet which they put in the water to make the white clothes whiter. It seemed to work, but I don't know how. But those sort of things I can remember. I can remember when I was very young, my mother and father lived in my aunt's house. Now, my aunt had a three-bedroom council house, an outside toilet, and she had three children. They were all older than me, three girls and a boy. And we lived for 7 years in one room. We ate, we slept, we did everything in that one room. We shared the kitchen, we shared the bathroom. And the bath only got used once a week, but that's the way it was in those days. It wasn't until I was about 7 years old when my mother got a new house. And we thought that was it, God had been kind to us. Because up to that time, we had lived in very, very cramped condition. And
what was your change of address? Can you give the two addresses?
Yes, it was 11 Blake Avenue, my aunt's house. And then mine was 5 Lambourne Gardens, which were new houses. And I can remember the first day when my father lit the fire in the range. The smell of the metal as it got hot, and everything was new. I mean, you know, being a new house, everything was new. Everything was strange to us. I was 7. My one sister was 5 and a half, and the other one I think was she would be 3.
Were there any political disturbances on the streets in the 30s that you remember around here?
No, there was no political disturbances whatsoever. That was unheard of. In those days, it was unheard of. Nobody had anything. Nobody wanted what their neighbour had got. We all accepted, it was accepted that you were poor. All the women at nights used to come out, in the summer I'm talking about, all the women would come out and they would congregate round somebody's gate. And they'd stand there maybe 2-3 hours, all talking between themselves. Not political, just about everyday things. Things that had happened during the day and that. And everybody was friendly. In Derbyshire, you could, where my wife came from, the door was always open. You didn't go in the front door, you went in the back door, and the door was always open. But it wasn't quite as bad, quite like that where I lived. But I mean, you only had to knock at the door, and the door was opened, and you walked in. Everyone was so friendly. There was no, I don't know if I'm doing the saying the wrong thing here, but there were no coloured people. We had no disturbances. We had one coloured boy in our school, and he was the father of a merchant seaman. The son of a merchant seaman. And he was the only boy, but I mean, we didn't discriminate. We used to call him Darkie, but you didn't discriminate in any way. He was accepted as one of us, you know, he was one of the boys. But there was no, I can't ever remember any political disturbance. The only thing that you did get in the East End, which was miles away from us in those days, to my mind, round about Bow and Whitechapel in that area, you'd get Mosley in his black shirts. You'd get trouble up there with the black shirts and the Jews. But we didn't get any of it around where I lived. There was nothing there, nothing at all.
Now, we haven't really said very much about the Blitz in Barking and Ilford. What can you give some details of what you saw of the bombing attacks?
Yes, we were bombed quite a bit. I can remember one Saturday afternoon. The sirens went, must have been about 2 o'clock. And we looked up in the sky, we heard the aeroplane engines. We looked up in the sky, and there was about 500 German bombers coming right towards Barking, following the Thames. And they was obviously making for the docks, but they got up as far as between Barking and Dagenham, and all of a sudden the Barry's balloons were there, and all of a sudden all the guns started up, and they put a barrage up in front of them, and they all turned right. They all followed each other, and then they went round, and then they came back again, and then they bombed the docks. And there was that day, there was all sorts of planes flying about all over the place. There was our fighters got amongst them. There was several German planes coming down. Two or three Spitfires were shot down. There was parachutists coming down that had jumped out. One case down at Dagenham. A parachutist came down, and he was hanging on the advertising hoardings by his parachute, and the home guard rushed up and he fired at him and hit him in the foot. And when they got him down, he ripped his flying jacket open. He was a Polish pilot, but of course he was shouting at them in Polish, and they thought he was German. So this one chap, he got a bit trigger happy and shot him in the foot. I don't know what happened to him, but I don't think his journey was very good after that. He must have got a right rollicking.
But you weren't there at the time?
No, I wasn't there at that time, no. My grandmother was bombed out twice in Barking. The first time, she lost everything. And then she was put in accommodation. And then they gave her another house, which was another council house, and then that was flattened by a landmine. Funny thing happened the day after. I went round with my grandmother's lodger to see if we could salvage anything, and we went round the back gardens, because we couldn't get down the front because it was all roped off, so we went round through the back gardens, and I saw about 5 or 6 chickens running about, and they hadn't got a feather on them. all the feathers had been blown off by the blast, and they were still alive, running about the garden, pecking at food and whatever, without a feather on them. And I thought, how strange. It was such a strange sight. But the whole house was, well, the whole block was flattened by that. A couple of days after that, there were some more landmines dropped in Barking, and my pal and I went to, as we did in those days, kids, you know, we went to have a look, and I found a piece of nylon cord about 3 foot long, which was from this mine, and of course I kept that as a souvenir. And one of the chaps said, if you want a souvenir, he says, go up the road there. He said, there's a landmine hasn't gone off and it's standing up in the middle of the road. Well, it had hit the road and it had gone into the road about 9 inches into the road surface, and it stood up with the parachute hanging over the top of it. So my pal and I went up and I said, I'm going to get that parachute. So I got my knife out, got under the rope and started making for the mine. And a voice said, oi, where do you think you're going? So I said, it was a big policeman. I said, I'm going to get that parachute. You stupid little bugger, bugger off, he said. That could go off at any minute. And of course, you couldn't see my arse for dust then. I was gone. But when you think how stupid you can be when you're young. But Barking did get, we got quite a bashing with the bombs and the bombing. And to go back a little bit, when these German 500 bombers, that was the afternoon when they bombed the docks, and they firebombed it, and the whole of the docks were alight, and then they came back at night and dropped high incendiaries into the flames, and the whole of the East End was alight, the London docks. And of course, from here, it's you can see, well, you're quite close to the river and you're quite close to the docks.
How do you think public morale stood up to the bombing?
I think it was very good, because I can remember we would hear the planes come over at night, and then we had a battery of, I think it was 4 or 8 guns, I'm not quite sure, in Barking Park. And when they fired, and they nearly blew you out of your dugout, like your air raid shelter. But you'd hear all the women down the street, go on, Barking, give it to them. You know, the morale was pretty good. There was no way we were going to be defeated. There was no way we were going to pack it in. Because I think Churchill was the main instigator of that. He boosted everyone's morale very, very high. And but there was no thought of Londoners giving in to the bombing. I don't know about other parts of the country. I suppose they were all the same. But because an Englishman's best time is when he's got his back to the wall. And then he'll fight. 9 times out of 10 he won't fight unless he's provoked. But when he is roused, I must say that I'm very proud of the, you know, the little part that I played. But we took a lot of prodding to get us going. But
was there any hatred of the German air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
No, I don't think so. We had there was one plane came down in Barking on the marshland over near Beckton Gasworks, and I went there to see if I could get a souvenir. But the 5 airmen that were there were buried in Barking Cemetery. And people did go to have a look at their graves, whether it was morbid curiosity or what.